things aren't, I'm an alcoholic.
They are.
Done the work out of the book with God and a sponsor, with God and a landscaper, as I like to say. So I'd like to thank Jay for asking me to speak. I love this group. I got sober with this group. I went through the steps with a sponsor from this group, and I'll forever be grateful for the people in this room. I had absolutely no, I when I got sober, I lived in Fall River, and I absolutely had no issue making the hour-long drive out here to the Cape to go to this meeting because it was that important to me, and I did that for well over a year before I started. My friends and I started a group in Westport, which is now in Fall River. So I'm not going to spend too much time on how I got here. I think you can imagine, most of you, how I got here. I could no longer drink in safety, and the time had come that I had to make a decision that if I wanted to survive past my 40s, that I was probably going to have to quit drinking and quit taking drugs. And the unusual circumstance I found myself in just a few months without a drink was that was something I didn't expect. The things I was concerned with when I quit drinking was like, geez, what am I going to do at a wedding? You know, how am I going to toast? Or what am I going to do on New Year's Eve? Or all the silly, crazy shit alcoholics think about when they're faced against alcoholic destruction. But 60 days or so after I put the drink down, those weren't the things that concerned me anymore. What concerned me was that I thought I was losing my grip on sanity. And I found that living without the medicine I had been anesthetizing myself with for, you know, almost 30 years was not an easy thing to do. And I figured if I was going to be miserable, I'd rather be drunk and miserable than sober and miserable. So I was pretty close to heading back out. And I ran into a guy at a meeting I went to once in Somerset. I haven't been to that meeting again since. I never go to that meeting. I don't know why. I don't even remember why I was there. But there was a guy there from the Cape, and he was speaking. And I introduced myself to him. And he said, are you new? Which was like the most fucking obvious thing in the world. And I said, yeah. I'm just for a couple months now, I'm coming around. He's like, he said, hey, you know, there's a men's meeting out on the Cape that'll help you with that sick feeling you have in your stomach right now. Mm-hmm. And it was, that was the first meaningful thing I heard in AA. And that's a true story. So, I mean, I heard my father had gotten sober when I was young, before my mother passed away. My mother died of cancer when I was 10, and my father got sober, and he would haul my sister and I to meetings, and I'd hear all the one-liners that come up in open AA, you know what I mean? And so by the time I had come around, like those types of things weren't penetrating. I mean, I had a pretty thick head at that point. And I needed a different message. So when somebody looked at me and said, like, hey, there's a meeting that can help you with that shitty feeling you've got in your stomach. Like, I mean, he could see right through me because I had a shitty feeling in my stomach and it was pretty obvious to him. So I figured I was about to give up, so what's the, you know, I would have pissed on a spark plug if I thought it would have done any good, you know what I mean? So I got on my motorcycle, and I rode my ass out to Hyannis, and walked down to the basement there, and what I heard down there absolutely blew me away. It was a room full of 100-plus guys, and it was on this step. It was on the fear part of step 4, and I absolutely could not believe that the men in that room would admit to some of the things that they did in front of other guys, a big room of guys like that. And these were, you know, guys that rode Harleys. They were big, tough guys. You know, these were not, these weren't your sensitive types, so to speak. So I immediately got some hope out of that. I met my sponsor at that meeting, and I, you know, not too long after engaged in this process. So when it came to step 4, as we talked about last week, I wrote for nearly a year. I was freshly dumped prior to my kickoff of the fourth step. So I had plenty of time. And so I wrote 4 days a week my sponsor recommended that I write for 2 hours at a time, taking a 5-minute break in between. And when I did turnarounds, I had to write, you know, where was I, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or afraid? And that part comes before the fear list. And I wrote essentially what was mostly the same fears that were pertinent to most of my resentments. The biggest one is fear of other people's opinions, right? So I think I heard Paul last week say, I have a fear of other people's opinions because what you think of me is what I think of me, right? And that's terrifying to me. And that was a motivator for a lot of the resentments and bad relationships and negative feelings I had toward people came from that kind of thing. The third step, it says, we step on the toes of our fellows and then they retaliate. That was a bucket of cold water when I read that sentence because, you know, I was blissfully unaware of my condition. I was walking through the world thinking that, you know, every third person I met was a fucking asshole. You know what I mean? And then, but after reading some of this, it's now starting to dawn on me that I step on the toes of my fellows, then they retaliate. Like, not only do I have a part in this, by the end of writing out, the first part of my fourth step was pretty obvious that I almost always generated that back and forth. It was usually on me. So when it came time to write a list of fears, I had a significant number of them already written down throughout my fourth step. One of the things I spoke about with my sponsor was that we were coming out of a meeting. I can't remember which meeting it was, a Big Book Step Study meeting, and it was on fear. And like 8 guys in the room said something about being afraid of sharks. And I was like, man, fucking a lot of guys in the Cape are afraid of sharks. And he laughed. He said, yeah, that's an easy one to be afraid of. And when I made the fear list, that dawned on me what that meant, right? Like, so lots of people are afraid of snakes, and I had all those things, right? So if I had, I call them rational fears. He called them rational fears, you know what I mean? I'm afraid of bees, or I'm afraid of snakes, or I'm afraid of lions, or I'm afraid of sharks, or like, you name it. Like, afraid of, you know, and you're biologically, you're supposed to be afraid of sharks, right? Sharks can kill you. That's a rational fear. But if I look through my fourth step and I see things like fear of other people's opinions, you know, that's a little less rational. People that are not like me, people that are not maladjusted to life in some way, they probably don't have that fear. Or if they do, it isn't as significant in their life like it is in mine. Like I can be perpetually obsessed with what other people think of me, and then I try to be somebody else instead of being what God would have me be. And I made a promise in the third step that I wasn't going to run the show anymore. You know, I'm going to ask God for help. And so essentially, I wrote out all these fears. I wrote the rational fears. I had the paradoxical fears, fear of success, fear of not being successful, things like that. But the corrosive ones were things that were, I thought, were ugly. You know, fear of other people's opinions, fear of not being adequate, fear of confrontations, any kind of confrontation, you know, despite how tough and how much of a fucking tough guy I thought I was. Like, I have a fear of confrontations. I have a fear, I had written down often, fear of feeling awkward. I don't like awkward tensions, or I don't like awkward moments or embarrassing things, fear of being embarrassed. That was on the list. And there were things that I was afraid that I was a bad guy. I was afraid that I was a bad guy now. I'm writing down in my fourth step, all of these things are becoming apparent to me that, you know, I was the bad guy in a lot of these things. Fear of being a bigot, you know. I had a fear that I may have become, at some point in my life, somebody that I was not very proud of. So all those things were true. So essentially, my sponsor said, this is what you're going to do. You're gonna write down, you know, I made this list of fears. I don't remember how many were on there. There were quite a few. And then And then he said, you know, I basically wrote, I was like a kid in fucking second grade, like writing on a chalkboard, like, I will not fucking chew gum in class. You know what I mean? Like, so it was basically, what did I do? Well, I trusted and relied on myself to overcome fear of X, Y, Z. And like, what should I have done? I should have trusted and relied on God to have me be what God would want me to be. You know what I mean? And that's a pretty redundant thing, you know what I mean, to write that shit over and over and over. I think that the idea there is that, you know, again, in step three, I said I would turn my will over to the care of God as I understand God. And that's what I need to do, especially when it comes to fear, because I can't manage it well. I'll tell you this, like, I've got a bad back, I have a ruptured disc in my back, so I don't know how many MRIs I've had, but it's fucking way too many. They don't make those machines for slim guys like me. And I've never been in one of those fucking things. And so the first time I went, they said, you're going to lie down. We're going to put you in this machine. It's a little tube. And I told it was, the machine is at the hospital, but you got to go outside in like a trailer, like, to get in this thing. Like, this is Charlton Memorial Hospital in Fall River, right? So, you know, this is not, it's not fucking Mass General. So the girl points at the machine. I said, listen, man, if I go in there, I'm going to get stuck in there. Like, I'm not going to fit in there. She says, no, I'm, you know, I'm like mildly claustrophobic. I'm active at the time. So I lay down. They put me in that machine. It's hot, summertime. It's a van outside. I'm sweating in that thing. I got fucking stuck in that machine. So there's a tech, a radiology tech, has got each leg and they're fucking trying to pull me out of this machine. So that was my first trip to the MRI machine. So I'm not a fan. And a few times after that, I freaked out in there and hit the little button and said, just fucking get me, you know, just get me out of here. That's embarrassing. I was a Marine, you know what I mean? Like, it's embarrassing, like, to punch out of there and say, like, fuck it, I can't be in the MRI machine, you know what I mean? So I tried all kinds of shit. I'd get shit-faced before I'd go to Shields of MRI. That kind of worked. I hit the doctor up for some benzos and got shit-faced. I think I did that more to have fun, because I had the day off. And then I managed to get through the whole MRI with that. But I tell you all that story to tell you that I forgot about it. There was a large period where I had just didn't, you know, bother with the spine doctor or anything. And about a year after I did this work, I had a little flare up. I went to see the doctor. I wasn't even thinking about it. I wasn't even thinking about it. My wife drove me down to Shields of MRI. They asked me to get another MRI. I went in, I got the MRI, and I'm on the way home and I'm like, holy shit, man, I used to be fucking terrified of those things. I used to be terrified of them. And I didn't even think about it. I didn't think about getting in it. I didn't think about it while I was in it, and it didn't dawn on me until I was on the way home. I was like, holy shit, man, I just, like, had a, like, a, you know, I think they had to do it again, too. They're like, hey, can you do it again? I was like, yeah, whatever, man, turn the radio up. I was completely fine in there. There's a huge difference. That's just one piece of evidence of many things that happened to me after this process that make my life different today. I mean, I'm a completely different guy. I can easily be this guy again, no problem. And I usually know pretty quickly if that's happening. If I'm having a shitty day, if I get to the end of the day, I'm like, man, what a fucking shitty day. I know something in my program is off. You know what I mean? And we get to talking about that stuff in 10 and 11, but it's stuff that I learned in step 4 and 5. So, but there's a paragraph in here I really like. It's not a long reading. I'll finish with this. We can all fucking go watch the Bruins. So it says, we asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, or at least I thought I did, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. And one of the things they teach you in the Marine Corps is to be cocky. And that works in boot camp when you're fucking 18 years old and you're dumb and you're usually loaded. And That doesn't stop working when you get to the end of your 20s, and it certainly doesn't work anymore when you're 40-some years old. So not a lot of things were working for me by the time I got to this program, but I can tell you this, my life is a complete 180. I'll be 49 years old in July. I'm married, I have a house, I have a truck with an inspection sticker, which is a fucking miracle. I have a house, a beautiful house in Rochester. I'm married to a person that gives me immediate feedback when I'm not on this program. I have a 3.5-year-old beautiful daughter, and my wife's pregnant. She's due at the end of May with our second. I mean, that is 10,000 light years from where I was when I walked into the St. Francis Xavier Church in Hyannis. So, I mean, if you're new, I mean, if it can work on me, a stubborn fucking guy like me, like, it can work for just about anybody. And I don't care, you know, where you're at. And you know, if you're sitting in this room listening to me talk and you're new, things are probably not okay, right? Let's be honest with ourselves. And if you thought there was a problem, which you probably do because you came down here to listen to this bullshit, right? Then there probably is. And it's more obvious to everybody else than it is to you. That was true about me, you know what I mean? So all I got to say is, if you're here now, you fucking belong here. Sorry. So just show up here next week and you'll be okay. All right? Thanks very much for letting me know.
All right, I'm going to repeat this again. If you have completed the fifth step out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous,